This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
To wake us up in the morning. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy Big Ed Davis, we thank you. We thank you so much for joining us. It is Monday, April the 11th. Wow. In a few minutes, Michelle Menton of the Competitive Enterprise Institute will be talking with us, and we are going to discuss the fight by her organization, CEI, among others, to keep the Food and Drug Administration from banning synthetic nicotine. Now, why would they want to fight the FDA on synthetic nicotine? We are going to find out in a few minutes. And Florida seems vindicated now as a new study shows that the Sunshine State was among the best in its handling of the COVID virus. New York and California, not so much. So we're going to get some thoughts on this, as well as a few other things, from Andrew and Angelo Ceresi, the brothers Ceresi, by the way. One's in Florida, one's in New York. We'll get their perspectives. And a new survey says Americans' stress and loneliness are now at all-time highs. We are going to take a look at that. So stay tuned for that a little bit later in the show. And in our Ultimate Top 10, we have a goodie for you. The top 10 longest-serving presidential press secretaries. You know, Jen Psaki, those kinds of people. How long have they served? Who are the longest? So stay tuned for that as well. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Guys, for the best haircut in Tampa Bay, I am telling you, get over there. It's located just north of State Road 580, Main Street, on Overcash Drive. Call for your appointment first. 727-733-3773. Now, they are open Tuesdays through Saturday. All right, so lots going on. And how this President Zelensky of Ukraine manages to do what he does is absolutely amazing. I don't know that they could have had a better president for that country at the right time. It was like Winston Churchill in England during World War II. They couldn't have probably had a better prime minister than him. Providential. Ukrainian President Zelensky said today that Mariupol is destroyed. The city of Mariupol in Ukraine is gone. Tens of thousands of people are dead, he said, but Russians are still continuing the military operation there. He was addressing South Korean lawmakers, by the way. He's been talking with lawmakers from all over the world. He said Ukraine needs various military technologies, from airplanes to tanks. Of course, he's been asking for that for a long time. Now, Mariupol officials estimate roughly 5,000 civilians are dead. They warned last week that given the size of the destruction caused to the city, it could be a lot worse, that the death toll could be in the tens of thousands. And they also have accused Russian forces of using mobile crematoriums to cover up their alleged war crimes. Kind of, you know, during World War II with the attempted elimination of Jewish people by the Nazis. Crematoriums was a word that came into use. In the meantime, Zelensky said that Joe Biden was the person who could stop Russia's invasion of his country. I wonder if Joe heard that. He said Russian troops will move to even larger operations in the east of our state. He says he's provided Biden a list of resources he needs to ensure that his country survives. He said, to be honest, whether we'll be able to survive depends on this. He says, unfortunately, I don't have the confidence that we will be receiving everything we need. Well, I don't blame you for not having the confidence. I don't have a lot of confidence in Biden for just about anything. But why they won't allow those Polish MiGs to be handed over and then restock Poland with American jets, this is what... Why couldn't Biden have done that? He's handing jets to Poland. He's not entering American jets into the Ukraine. But he won't do that. He won't do that. I guess he was holed up in his basement again in Delaware over the weekend, where all this stuff is going on. Somehow he manages to get back to his basement in Delaware. Speaking of Biden, he delivered remarks on the job reports for March, at that time, well, actually, the professionals who track the American attitudes toward the economy say they've a lot of trouble is coming for Democrats. Angry voters, slammed by higher prices, scarred by 2 years of fighting the pandemic, are ready to punish Democrats in these elections coming up in November. The University of Michigan's Consumer Confidence Survey, apparently widely respected, recently reached its lowest level in almost 11 years. Almost 70% of Americans think the economy is in poor shape. Almost 70%. 81% see a recession coming this year. I mean, the news is not good for the Democrats. I actually saw a guy on TV today, this morning, a Democrat, who oversees the Democratic campaign and election things coming up, trying to talk his way into saying that if certain things go a certain way, they'll be able to retain the House. And I'm thinking, how are you going to do that? It's a little bit late. Your messaging is terrible. I think there'll be a lot of Democratic states that are going to select Republicans that haven't been selected there in a long, long time. Just the way it's going to be. Okay, let us do this. We are going to take our break. And when we come back, Michelle Minton of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, she's going to join us. We're going to talk about the... by CEI, among other groups, fighting the Food and Drug Administration to keep them from banning synthetic nicotine.
I gave a girl a ride in the wagon. She crawled in and took control.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. And delighted to have back an old friend of ours, Michelle Minton from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. She's a senior fellow there. She specializes in consumer policy, and we've talked a lot about drugs and gambling and all kinds of crazy things with Michelle. And Michelle, I see that the Competitive Enterprise Institute is joining other groups to try to stop the Food and Drug Administration from banning synthetic nicotine. Now, most people would go, why? Why would they want to fight banning synthetic nicotine? Is synthetic nicotine something we want on the market? What would you say?
I said that's a really great question, and synthetic nicotine isn't something we're necessarily supportive of, really. It's just that it is another example of the FDA forcing the market into weird spaces that they never would have gone if they'd just given them a way to actually use the ingredients in the and get the products they want on the market in a legal way. So banning synthetic nicotine is just it's just going to push these companies further into the illicit market rather than pulling them forward into a sane regulatory system that they can actually comply with.
Mm-hmm. It's like trying to just stifle drug use rather than having the government become involved in it to some extent.
Exactly. It's very similar to this. So, you know, we don't want people to use heroin, for example. So we're going to increase the ban. We're going to increase enforcement. And then you get fentanyl. And then you get products that are made with odd ingredients because the illicit market, or in this case, the gray market, we'll call it, are trying to figure out how they can get around the regulations without being completely illegal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Now, apparently, this ban on synthetic nicotine somehow made its way into that omnibus spending package. Is that right?
Yeah, there have been a few proposals in Congress, I think, too, but none of them have received any sort of hearing or really much public discussion. People don't even know, you know, for the most part, what synthetic nicotine is, why they should care about it, if it's dangerous, you know, if it is something that should be regulated. And honestly, if the FDA was going to regulate synthetic nicotine use in e-cigarettes, that would be something nobody would really oppose. But that's not what we're talking about. Regulation here, the way it is written, is just a replacement word for prohibition. They're only giving companies a full 120 days from the day that bill passed to submit and receive approval from the FDA. FDA itself has said it takes 6 months to write up those applications if they're going to be acceptable to the FDA. So it is functionally a ban on the use of synthetic nicotine, mm-hmm, without any kind of review or any kind of real questioning of, is it a problem at all? Is it really a problem? It's chemically identical to nicotine derived from tobacco. So it's, you know, a outright prohibition without even considering it doesn't really make sense.
No. I mean, the term synthetic nicotine sounds a little scary. It's like you think of designer drugs or synthetic, exactly, drugs, and you wonder what's in it. But this is the stuff that they put into those vaping cigarettes and things?
Yeah, synthetic nicotine is just nicotine that's formulated in a lab versus being extracted from tobacco. And, you know, it's something that's been around for a very long time. It's what they would use in the patch or gum, things like this, you know, things that are approved by the FDA.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, it's an expensive thing. E-cigarette companies wouldn't necessarily use it because it's just more expensive. But because of the way the law has been written, that, you know, FDA has power to regulate e-cigarettes as tobacco products because they have tobacco-derived nicotine in them, that companies are pursuing this, quote, loophole, this more expensive loophole, because the FDA has signaled with, you know, 6 million applications to be approved, the e-cigarette products to be approved, they've denied many thousands, many millions are still left waiting, and they've only approved two companies' products, both big tobacco companies. So what this signals to the e-cigarette market that is made up mostly of small independent companies who don't have, you know, $1 million for each application, it says that there is no real path to approval with the current system the FDA is using.
Yeah.
They're trying to figure out how can we stay on the market kind of legally for a little while, and maybe the FDA will work it out.
Yeah. My colleague Big Ed's nodding in agreement. He has been a proponent. He's used his, I guess you call him the cigarette. Ed, you tend to agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, what Michelle's saying is great. I mean, I haven't smoked a tobacco product since 2010. I first tried to, I went on the e-cigarette market looking for the best one, the best battery, best flavor. Finally settled on one. I smoked that same one for over 10 years. That same brand. And I know of all the loopholes constantly that these companies have been fighting from the FDA. The latest one, I think, was, well, too many of these flavors are too they're too favorable for kids to want to jump on board with. You know, but the last time I checked, there's many flavors of vodka out there that might be bubble gum or peach or strawberry, and they'll jump on those, but it's regulation at the store.
Cannabis gummies, cannabis brownies, you know, this is the hypocrisy of it, is that, and it is always hypocritical when you're talking about drug regulation, because the drugs that are legal and or we should legalize are the ones that, frankly, white suburban parents use, and then the things that are talked about being banned and horrible for children are the ones that aren't used by them, are the ones that are used by poorer white people, rural white people, people who are, you know, people of color, for example. And that's in this country, you know, most white, wealthy people or middle-class people don't smoke anymore. The smokers are the poor, rural white people and people of color. They're the ones who are still smoking, and millions of Americans have used and continue to use, you know, non-combustible e-cigarettes. They vape them, not smoke them. They've used them as a much safer replacement for smoking. It has worked for so many people. There's so much science, too, showing how effective these products are, way more effective than the patches, the gums, or the lozenges. And it's just, you know, the kid use excuse is just that. It's an excuse. It's something, sure, we should pay attention to kids using nicotine, but nicotine on its own, outside of the combustion produced by cigarettes, isn't really the grave threat that a lot of people think it is. It's a little bit more like caffeine use in childhood.
We're talking with Michelle Minton, and she is a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, specializing in consumer policy. We are talking about the FDA's banning of synthetic nicotine. You know, being a kind of a libertarian show here, Michelle, we just don't want government involvement in the free market and in products as much as possible. It seems like when they get involved in it, the product's quality goes down and its price goes up. We can look at a million different products and come up with that. So is that same that works just as much in the e-cigarette market too, right? The involvement like this.
Absolutely. The perverse thing is that a lot of people, you know, who are pushing for regulations like this, they're doing it because they hate big tobacco. And that's understandable. Big tobacco lied. They put out a product that's pretty deadly. But what's perverse about this is the regulations and the approach FDA is taking is actually going to make the market completely dominated by big tobacco. Like I said, the only products FDA has approved so far are from R.J. Reynolds and British American Tobacco. And then you have all these companies that have never been involved in tobacco. They've never produced cigarettes, and they're being completely locked out of the market. Or what's happening in the states and local communities, they're being taxed out of existence, or the flavors are being banned. Which, you know, if you're a vape shop, you know, if you're a vape shop owner, it's pretty hard to survive if the only thing you can offer are a few devices and only tobacco-flavored e-cigarettes, because that's not what people want. And the biggest loophole of all is the illicit market. You know, if you can't get through legal regulations in any way, what's going to happen is the market is going to be dominated by big tobacco companies who make a few products that people don't really like all that much, and they're going to be very expensive. And then you're going to have the illicit market, products made in people's basements or coming from China or other countries smuggled in that are made by legitimate companies, perhaps, or who knows. But those companies won't necessarily be accountable to our regulations, and they certainly won't check IDs, the people who are selling them.
Yeah. Haven't we learned anything from the days when they tried to prohibit alcohol? In the roaring 20s, why could, when the government steps in and says all of a sudden, I'm sorry, this is not good for you, so therefore we are going to ban it. Are you kidding?
Nope.
That's how Al Capone and the boys all made their money.
The only thing that we've learned from alcohol prohibition, cannabis prohibition, any kind of drug prohibition, is that you don't call it prohibition anymore. You call it regulation, or you call it restrictions, or you say we're doing it for the children. You don't say we're banning things, even though that's exactly what's happening, and you are pushing people into the, you know, the drug cartels in Mexico, for example, can't make money off cannabis products anymore because, you know, America has many states with legal cannabis. We're producing high-quality products, better quality products than what was coming from Mexico. And so they're going to be looking for new opportunities to continue making money. They already have, you know, the logistics worked out. Their dealers and how they transport things. And we are already seeing in the states, because a few states have banned flavored e-cigarettes, a few cities have banned e-cigarettes completely, even though they still allow cigarettes, we are seeing all of those cartels, those existing smuggling routes, starting to get flooded with e-cigarette products. So it's the same thing over and over again, and American lawmakers, regulators, and advocates never really seem to learn that human beings, you know, aren't in a lab. You can't just tell them to do something, and they'll just listen because it's the law. It's not the way it works.
Yeah. So you band together with a bunch of other organizations. Do you really think it's going to – do you think the FDA is going to listen?
No. I don't think they'll listen to this on the synthetic nicotine issue, but they may. You know, the Commissioner Califf is a smart guy. He's a clinician. He really cares about things like cancer. If he's reasonable enough, you will understand that at the very least, they need to delay the implementation of this rule so that companies who are currently using synthetic nicotine can, you know, can work with the FDA and produce real applications and potentially have their products approved. I don't think the FDA will ever approve those products. Really what Commissioner Califf needs to do is work with the Center for Tobacco Products at FDA and figure out how they can regulate this market realistically, not just, you know, not million-dollar applications that take 3-4 more years to get approved, but a streamlined way for these companies to say, look, you set standards of what are the safe ingredient levels, the thresholds. We meet them, and if we don't have anything weird in there and none of our ingredients go outside of those thresholds, it's just a rubber stamp approval.
Yeah.
And then what you have is a legal regulated market that the FDA can actually say, point to products and say, you know, we've tested them, or we periodically test them, and they do, in fact, fall within these standards that we set for safety. So they're allowed on the market.
Mm-hmm. As long as we've got you, Michelle, and you also oversee issues like internet gambling and the like, it seems like rules are being relaxed more and more for people to, I guess, to gamble online. Is that the case? Is it working out? Are there pitfalls? What's your overall view?
Yeah, I mean, it's really impressive. So we're approaching, I think, the four-year anniversary of sports gambling, the prohibition on sports gambling ending, and now 30 states and D.C. have legalized sports gambling. That is a $52 billion market.
Wow.
Now where it was a $0 market before. I mean, it was a market that existed, and it was, you know, maybe upwards of $100 billion, but all of that money was going to criminals and overseas.
Right.
And now states are making, you know, they have access to that money. Jobs are being created. People are being able to, people who always were going to bet and were betting can now do so above board. You know, they don't have to go to the local bookie and potentially, you know, have their knees broken if they don't pay up. They can work with legitimate companies. So, you know, there are always risks. And this is something the government has to look at when people engage in behaviors like this. But the thing is, they're going to anyway. So, you know, you can't stop it. You can just sort of monitor it and maybe give people resources and tell them where they can go if they're having a problem.
Yeah.
You can work with companies too and say, you should look out for this stuff. Otherwise, we might take your license away if you're, you know, if you're being predatory and trying to prey on people who have a problem with gambling.
Yeah, I mean, the world hasn't collapsed because of this internet gambling that I can see. It just seems to have slid into place, and you know, so far so good. Michelle, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. There's always so many things going on in the areas that you that you concentrate on. So thank you so much. Look forward to talking with you again soon.
It was great to talk to you guys again.
Okay, Michelle. Michelle Minton, Competitive Enterprise Institute. All right, we're going to take our break. When we come back, Florida now seems vindicated. A new study showing that the Sunshine State was among the best in handling COVID. Yeah. New York and California, not so much. We'll get a little bit of a perspective from both of the Ceresi brothers, Andrew and Angelo. And you got
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Do you have trouble with communicating, or are you drowning in clutter? You are not alone. There is a solution. This is Christiana, your clarity coach. I can help you find the clarity you need, and it's easier than you think. Whether it's your communication, your mind, or your disorganized physical space, join me Wednesdays at 5 p.m. for Clarity Corner with Christiana, and let's do this together. Remember, that's Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back on a nice sunny, but a little bit on the, what do you call it, Ed? It's pleasantly cool out there right now. I really enjoy it. I love it.
It'll be pleasantly 80 degrees in a couple hours.
I knew it wouldn't last. Well, a new study, which is always a new study, but this one has graded states by how well they handled the coronavirus pandemic and its subsequent restrictions and lockdowns. It's the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. I guess we can call it CUP. And they ran a study comparing state performances on metrics including the economy, education, mortality from the virus. And they examined how the states and their respective governors handled the pandemic. They said shutting down their economies and schools, shutting down their economies and their schools was by far the biggest mistake that governors made. And they said, we hope the results of this study will persuade governors not to close schools and businesses. They said New York, California, New Jersey, and Illinois among the worst in dealing with the coronavirus. States like Florida, Utah, South Dakota, Nebraska, all governed by Republicans, received the highest scores in the study. They got the top six, 1 through 6. In fact, 13 of the top 15 states in the study are run by Republicans. Well, we got the Ceresi brothers to join us this morning. One is in a state run by a Republican. The other's in a state run by a Democrat, Angelo and Andrew. What do you think, Andrew? Do you buy this study?
Paul, all I got to say is one word, DeSantis.
Yes.
Okay.
He's looking better and better.
I'll tell you, it's amazing. Better and better. Everywhere this kid is going, he's hitting a grand slam.
Yeah, he is knocking it out of the park, I must say.
I mean, not for nothing, I was listening to a Trump interview with the Washington Post. Did you happen to catch that?
No, and I would have loved to have heard it if it was with the Post. Go ahead.
Yes, well, you know, Trump won't turn down an interview. He doesn't care who it's with.
No, he will. He will take on anybody that. Yes, he will.
You know, go, Paul. What's going on? And I see it myself. In Pennsylvania, Donald Trump has endorsed Dr. Oz.
Yes.
Over McCormick, and the people. I was listening this morning, and the people can't even think of Dr. Oz. They're saying, we don't understand what's going on with Trump. How could he even support this guy? They know how he thinks about the women's rights as far as abortion and what he made statements before. But anyway, that was one bad endorsement. Then he endorsed Anna Paulina Luna for District 13 over here.
He did.
He did. I don't know what the story is with that. But I can't believe, and the people can't believe he endorsed her. But, you know, that was even before Kevin Haslett was in the race. And then I cannot believe that Donald Trump sat there and said, I made Ron DeSantis what he is. He did not make Ron DeSantis what he is. He endorsed Ron DeSantis. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
And he said, if Ron was to run against me, I can break him just as fast as I made him. Well, you know, I personally, you know, I love Trump. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, I know you do.
But you know where my heart really going to go if it has to.
Well, you have a family tie. You know people in the family.
Like I say, you know, Ron DeSantis, this kid is destined to be president here or there. And I don't think Trump wants to run against him right now. It's just like I was saying, I said, you know, Trump can endorse Santa Paulina all he wants in the state of Florida. I believe that a Ron DeSantis endorsement will be 10 times stronger in Florida than a Trump endorsement.
I almost can't believe I'm hearing this coming from you because you've been such a backer, I mean, really, a true blue backer of Donald Trump. But this is almost like a family situation. Angelo, did you hear what your brother had to say about Donald Trump?
Yeah, I can't believe that.
I think we got an imposter on the phone.
Oh, maybe that's it.
Yeah, let me put him on the spot.
Yeah, let's challenge him.
All right, Andrew.
Yes.
You can only put one of these in your barbershop, a DeSantis flag or a Trump flag.
Oh boy!
Right now,
you know, at this point, I'll have to put up the DeSantis flag for governor because that's what I know he's running for.
That's it. The love affair's over.
I got to keep the Trump there. But if it comes down to push and shove, you know, Ron DeSantis keeps getting more support. Did you see him at that
UFC?
The UFC thing? He walked in that stadium, and he got the same reception Trump will get.
He's a rock star.
Oh, he is. Yeah. 20,000 strong just went nuts. And I got to tell you, I've been thinking, I don't know if I want to wait past 2024 for DeSantis.
You want to get him in sooner?
I think we need it now.
Well, then we're going to have to figure out a way of getting rid of about three different people.
Has he got a cousin that could run in his place for governor or something
for governor?
Like that?
I'll take the place.
There you go.
Don't worry about a thing.
I don't know. I kind of like his dad. His dad could be a place guard. Hey, this is very interesting. First of all, do you see from this Washington Post interview that there is a rift that is widening between Trump and Ron DeSantis?
You know, Paul, I think Trump is afraid of Ron. I mean, I never thought I would see that, but it appears to me just the things that he's saying. Instead of him being the comrade and being happy what's going on in Florida and the great job that Ron is doing, he's trying to bring him down a little bit so he doesn't seem like he might be in his way.
Yeah. No, I think you may be right. I've often thought that his ego has kept him from being a truly, I don't know, a better one, a better Donald Trump than he is. You know, it just gets in his way. And if his ego is besmirched, it doesn't make any difference how good the people are. He finds a way to kind of distance himself. I think it's a weakness of his.
You know, Paul, he's really got to watch what he says about Ron DeSantis, because Ron DeSantis is not only loved in Florida. People nationwide know who he is.
Oh, yes.
And every person in a Democrat state just praises how Florida is and wishes they had Ron DeSantis as their governor. And I imagine if they had the chance to have Ron DeSantis as their president, I know who they would choose.
Yeah. Angelo, we were talking, of course, originally about this, the way New York and California and some other states, as opposed to Florida and Nebraska and Utah and Vermont, handled this this virus. And it seems like those that kept the schools open and allowed people kind of, you know, to go back and forth and not force them to stay in their homes, it seems like in the long run, a lot of, you know, that was the better way of going. Are you surprised to see that?
No, not really. I the way they closed down New York State and everything, we lost a lot of business. And plus, they lied on the fatalities, you know, when Cuomo was governor.
Yes, and the nursing home.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we lost a lot of businesses, you know, especially like the restaurants and stuff like that. A lot of them went out of business. you know, and they were supposed to get this funding, and they never did. It was a total chaos, and then they closed the schools. Of course, you know, the Democrats, they have a key, you know, let me put it this way, the teachers' unions, they have a key to the back door of the White House when the Democrats are in. And they were, you know, forcing their hand to close the schools, too, you know?
Right.
I mean...
Yeah, they went the way of the teachers' unions and kept a lot of kids out of class.
Right, right. I mean, for the longest amount of time, you know, I mean, and it hurt New York State.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I got a question for Angelo.
Go ahead, bro.
Angelo, being up in New York State, if it came down into the primaries of Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump, what do you think would happen in New York?
You got DeSantis backers and you got Trump backers.
I know,
and,
but...
The thing is that New York State, being a high-crime state, which it's been, right? And they got these bail reforms going on where the people are going out in the street. Whoever's going to be the biggest backer of... bail reform will get the nomination here in New York State.
You know, it's interesting. I'm sorry.
DeSantis or Trump?
Andrew?
Yes.
You know, that was a good question you posed. I think most people, of course, there's a lot of people in New York who do not know a lot about Ron DeSantis yet. He's still, despite, you know, we know him well here, and he's become a name on the national stage. But let's face it, Trump's got a big... better name recognition, which might, in a primary, give him a slight edge, you know, at this point. But when it comes to crime, I think DeSantis, people buy into DeSantis and his, you know, his fight against crime. I think that's a strong point for Ron DeSantis.
Right. And they all nationwide, they got to know him. Nationwide, they got to know him alone with his fight with Disney.
Yeah, well, he's getting more and more publicity.
Right, I mean, whoever is going to be the backer of fighting crime, critical race theory, you know, fighting critical race theory, fighting this wokeness, is going to get the nomination.
Well, in New York DeSantis shines on all those points then.
I mean, in New York State, people are big on this. I mean, I'm telling you, the crime here is unbelievable. They let these people out on the streets. Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. You know, there was a story. I didn't decide to bring it up, but you know that horrible situation in Sacramento where six people were killed? I think they were at some sort of a tavern or a lounge.
Yeah.
It was a guy that had been released that did it.
Well, most of these crimes that you're seeing going on, how many murders have happened with people that they've released in New York, California? All over the place.
I mean, the guy was a walking criminal, and they released him. And shortly after this last release, he knocks off six. He's involved in killing six people. It's horrible.
And now Biden wants to go after so-called ghost guns. You know, he's appointing. You know, you could go against the guns. It's the crime. These people, you let them out on the street, they're the ones that are doing the killing.
Yeah.
I mean, go after the people.
And it's not resonating. He's going to be talking about this. It's not going to be an issue with people.
No.
They're worried about going to the food store and the gas station and not being able to pay for it.
Right. I mean, it says the inflation is at a 40-year high. I mean, it's going to cost you between $5,200 and $6,000 extra just to survive this year alone, maybe even more.
I'm telling you, the Democrats have a complete tin ear. I think Biden's had a tin ear all his life. But the Democratic Party, and then they say, well, it's messaging. It's really, we're not getting our message. What message? What message are you not getting out? Your message is ringing loud and clear with people.
You know, I saw a story out of New York where a woman was attacked at the ATM with a man with a hammer. Personally, I think we should have more hammer control, and that would take care of
there
that.
There you go, yeah.
But
yeah, you should be able to come within 100
do you
feet
know,
of
do you know
ATM
that the perpetrator was out of jail before the woman was out of the hospital?
Yeah.
That speaks volumes right there.
Really,
I mean, that's
does.
What's wrong with this country.
Right. I'm thinking that a lot of cities are going to be hiring a lot more Republicans. Major cities are not. These people are not stupid. Now they've been marching to a Democratic tune for generations. But come on.
I mean, well, it's sad that we have to put a party affiliation on common sense.
I know.
Well, I'll tell you, New York State, the margin of error between whoever runs as a Republican and Kathy Hochul is there. We've got a chance. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the polling is within the margin of error.
Well, you know what I'm anxious.
Republican taking over.
Go ahead, Andrew.
What I'm anxious to see in Florida is I was reading an article where Ron DeSantis is going to start doing a Trump as far as pinpointing people he'd like to see get elected in the state of Florida. And I think that's a great idea, because if Ron endorses people that he knows are going to back his agenda of what he's trying to do, and he gets these people in, Florida is going to be even greater than it is right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's looking pretty... Go ahead.
He's doing an outstanding job, and you know, if he can get the right people in there into Congress in these right districts, it's like I said before, a congressman has got a lot of pulls in the big cities where the local governments, and we got to have these people in there backing him, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Florida's looking better and better. Ron DeSantis is looking better and better. I think the presidential primary, Republican presidential, it's kind of like it's his if he wants it. That's my thought. Whether or not
DeSantis
he's...
DeSantis or Trump?
I'm sorry, DeSantis. I meant to say DeSantis. I think that the Republican presidential primary for the 2024 election is Ron DeSantis's for the taking if he wants it. The question is whether or not at that point he'll want to be president. And that's a big question. Right, Andrew?
Well, that is a big question. And his mother will decide that for him, I'm quite sure.
His mother?
She'll decide it for him whether he wants to be president or not.
Oh, really?
When it comes to that, she's going to pull the string.
How does that phone call go, by the way? Hey, Mom?
Mom, can I become president, Ma?
Can I?
Please, Ma, I want to be president. Can I please be president?
I'm telling you, boy, the kid has got it. He's doing a dynamite job. He comes from a fantastic family. And you know what? The people around here see his family. They know his family. They see how family-oriented he is. The family first, Florida first. The kid's got it all.
Yeah, and people forget his military background and the like, right?
And to boot.
He's got it all, is right.
This kid could have been a $1,000 an hour Harvard attorney if he wanted to be. And look what he chose instead. He went into the Navy, became a Navy SEAL officer, and moved on from there.
Boy.
We still got to get him in that barbershop.
Well, we're trying.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay. Hey, guys, thanks so much to both of you. Good interview, and I look forward to next Monday with you together, and, of course, Andrew, with you on Wednesday.
You got it, buddy. Be good.
Take care.
Thanks, Angelo. Thanks, Andrew. All right. Very good. We're going to take our final break. And a new survey says Americans' stress and loneliness are now at all-time highs. We are going to take a look.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Hey, Tantalk listeners. Get your calendars out because Senior Voice America is going to an every morning format from 8 to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday. Your hosts Tim Bryce and Berkeley Badger shall have even more time to discuss politics, religion, finance, and health. So set your dials, you early bird seniors, and join the call-in party every morning, 8 to 10 a.m. on your Tantalk Radio Network. SBA, improving your day.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back for the final segment of Freedom Works, and we thank you so very much for being with us. By the way, we are here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Tantalk Radio Network. However, sometimes you just can't listen. You're doing other things. So thanks to Big Ed, all our shows are on podcast, which means all you got to do is go to our website, click on the podcast button, and you can listen to any of our shows. You'll know who the guest is. You'll know what the top 10 is. It's all there, thanks to Ed. Just go to our website, OurFreedomWorks.com. O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. All right, well, the COVID quarantine in general may be over, but the loneliness remains. Over half of Americans feel alone when it comes to their mental health. Think of that. Over 50% of people in this country feel alone when it comes to their mental health. A new survey of 2,000 Americans analyzed the ongoing impact of the virus on their mental health and found that despite policy changes like mask mandates slowly being lifted and kids returning to school, 56% feel alone and struggle to share their struggles with friends and family. 57% pointed to being less social as the top negative impact on their mental health. Now, this was conducted by Feel More Labs, a company called OnePoll, on behalf of Feel More Labs. It found 63% of respondents feel their stress levels are currently at an all-time high due to the pandemic. All-time high. Just over 2 in 5 respondents say poor sleep quality and an inconsistent sleep schedule are the top things they experience when they're feeling stressed. So they, about 40% of them say, you know, it's affecting their sleep as well. So, you know, sometimes we don't think of the physical effects of the pandemic. We don't think of the mental effects of the pandemic. Even if you don't get that virus directly, you know, it's affecting you. It really is.
I think we're finding that out more and more as days and weeks go on.
I think you're right. People are coming from that. Well, before we get to our top 10, Ed, first of all, it looks to me like the Tampa Bay Rays are doing pretty well. From what I can see, they were taking on, I think, the Baltimore Orioles over the weekend. You can verify that. But I also wanted you to touch on anything else that's going on. It was a tragic accident with that Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback. He was crossing the interstate or a big highway, and he gets hit by a truck.
A dump truck.
Wow.
And this is a criminal homicide going on right now, investigation. What? I don't know. There's got to be more to it. This is not your average. First of all, what was he doing on the interstate?
Early in the morning.
Very sorry for what happened.
Of course you are.
But now we got to find out, what was he doing on an interstate?
Wandering across a busy street like that.
So we have to wait to see how that plays out. But it was very tragic, yes. The Rays did sweep the Orioles. They're 3-0. Let's not put them in a World Series just yet.
No.
They are the Orioles. So they've got Oakland at home tonight, starting at 6:30. By the way, that's a different start. Change of start for those of you that will catch it on the radio. It is 6:30 first pitch. And I went back to watching the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, they had that curse thing going on with me.
Well,
because I've been watching and they lost. Now they
won big time.
Well, they played Buffalo and it was, you know, 5-0 win. I was like, what's the problem?
Yeah, I mean, they look great. I mean, they're going to make the playoffs. We all know that. And if they stay healthy, I think they got a shot again, don't you? If they can get their excitement level up.
Yeah.
That's exactly. A big if, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. It is time for our top 10. And I like this one, Ed. I like this one. You know, Peppermint Patty. That's what I call Jen Psaki. A lot of other people call
her. She's the chick from the band camp.
Yeah. She's got the red hair.
This one time at band camp. You didn't see those movies.
No,
from
I didn't.
American Pie, anyway.
Oh, yes. I remember the movie American Pie.
Okay, the girl from the band camp, they kept saying, and this one time at band camp, she's a spitting image of her.
I did not know that. Yeah. Okay, I'm glad you were. Okay, so here we have Jen Psaki, and she's been taking the slings and arrows for Joe Biden as presidential press secretary. So I thought, who are the ones that stood out and took it the longest? So we went back and we found them, okay? And I had to go to Wikipedia to do it. But here they are. By the way, the first one, the first press secretary to a president was, believe it or not, George Akerson to Herbert Hoover in 1929. That was when it started, all right? So here we go. Top 10 longest-serving presidential press secretaries. Number 10. Pierre Salinger. He was the press secretary to John Kennedy. He served 3 years and 59 days between 1961 and 1964. Number 9. Ed had fallen off the chair. He does that every once in a while. He got back on.
Damn narrow chairs.
I know. Number 9 is Jay Carney. Jay Carney, he served President Obama for 3 years and 129 days between 2011 and 2014. Number 8, Mike McCurry. Mike McCurry served 3 years and 225 days for Bill Clinton between 1994 and 1998. Can you imagine him taking some of those questions?
That's what I was going to say. That's one job you got to be very well prepared for. You come out looking like, not only make yourself look like an idiot, but you make the administration look like an idiot, too.
You got to be very careful, very deft with words.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. Number 7, Jody Powell. He served for exactly 4 years for Jimmy Carter between 1977 and 1981. Number 6, Ron Ziegler. Ron Ziegler served 5 years, 201 days for Richard Nixon. For Richard Nixon between 1969 and 1974. So he was there when Nixon was going through this Watergate craziness, too. Number 5, Charlie Ross. 5 years, 204 days between 1945 and 1950 for Harry Truman. Number 4, Larry Speaks. Now, there's a good name for a presidential press secretary. Hey, Larry Speaks. Okay, let's listen.
Well, you have to say Larry Speaks.
That's correct. Or Larry Speaks has just spoken.
Yeah.
Now he got on his bicycle and the spokes are broken.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'm talking about anymore. Anyway, 5 years, 308 days for Ronald Reagan, 1981 to 1987. Number 3, Marlon Fitzwater. He served for George H.W. Bush for 5 years, 354 days. He just missed exactly 6 years between 1989 and 1993.
Just missed that set of steak knives, huh?
Yes, indeed. Number 2, James Hagerty. Now, James Hagerty served for exactly 8 years. The full
two terms. That's rare.
Yes, exactly right. Of Dwight Eisenhower. That's when television was coming into play, between 1953 and 1961. All right. I know you don't. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't have known this. Number 1 is a guy by the name of Stephen Early, appropriately. Stephen Early. 12 years, 25 days for Franklin Roosevelt between 1933 and 1945.
So that's before the term limit was invoked, right?
Correct. Okay, Franklin Roosevelt served, he's the only president to have served more than 8 years.
Mm.
Yeah. He died in office. But Stephen Early, 12 years, 25 days. No one's going to break that record. So there you go.
That's a great trivia question, by the way.
It is, isn't it?
The only president to serve more than 8 years.
Yeah, it is. Roosevelt. He died in office.
My Rolodex.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thanks so much for listening. We will be back on Wednesday. And remember, freedom does work.
Cruising down the freeway in the hot sun. Suddenly red blue lights flash us from behind.